How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
It has been 2 weeks since we launched Lifetime Subscriptions on Build Your Eye.
2 weeks.
Yeah, because we launched on Wednesday before last week.
Cool.
Been a fun 2 weeks?
Yeah. Been a blur.
It has been a blur. But we got some stuff to talk about today. Stuff we're working on the site. Stuff that you're working on behind the scenes for the site. And maybe a little bit of commentary about Rich Harris's latest chili spicy talk.
Chili talk.
Which I haven't had a chance to watch yet. So let's start with this thing I have up here on my screen. I'm going to share a link to this. It's a great thread from Dan Hollick about blend modes in Figma, but really it applies to CSS too. So do you know about these blend modes?
I do not. I sometimes am stuck. I come across a Stack Overflow that has like a mixed blend mode and
yeah,
it's copied and pasted and then I move on.
Yeah. I am like in my super amateur levels of design acumen, sometimes find myself like dragging a gradient color over an image in Figma and pressing the down arrow key through all the mixed blend modes until I get something that looks right, because like Steve Shoger did me that 2 years ago for a thumbnail. So you can like desaturate an image, put a gradient over it, and then do mixed blend mode.
You can, you know, darken, which like bright, removes the light color.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Soft light, yeah, overlay. And so the reason that I'm talking about this right now is because the video I'm going to be publishing this week and a tip that I published over the weekend has to do with mixed blend modes in CSS. And they're pretty cool. So in particular, the effect that I shared, we'll link to the code recipe in the show notes for this episode, as well as this really great thread which summarizes these blend modes. But you've probably noticed these because they're pretty popular right now, like this kind of nav bar with like a floating, a moving tab bar, like the actual selected tab or selected nav item has some highlight treatment that moves. You can see this in like the Vercel dashboard, the tabs of the Vercel dashboard. And I mean, there's a bunch of places that do this, but it's kind of like the hello world of like a layout ID animation with frame of motion. And so just to explain, if you're listening and you haven't seen what I'm talking about before, let's say you have tabs and it's like a pill treatment. This is like back to Bootstrap days. Remember when they introduced pills? So you have a pill treatment. So the active one has like a blue background with white text, and the inactive ones have black text right next to it. You click on it and the pill, you know, jumps to the active nav item. With frame of motion, you can animate it. The tricky thing is that you can animate the pill, right? And so you can animate the pill. The tricky thing is that when you animate it, the active pill will be covering both the inactive text and the active text.
Or just like as a pill is moving.
As it's moving.
It's half the text is on front of the pill,
yes,
and the other half.
Yes, exactly. Of even the same nav item. So this makes it tricky because like you want the text that's active to be white so that shows up in the pill, and now half of it is white and it doesn't appear, and then it switches active to inactive. How do you deal with that, right?
It's also just like it's so uncanny,
yeah,
when you do that, because it's like, wait, which tab is selected? Like the one that has the white text? Like it's just weird looking.
You can literally have a tab covering half of the inactive, half of the active, and then yeah, the other half of the inactive and other half of the active on the white background. So now you're really just like screwed. There's like, yeah, four states here. You have inactive, active being obscured by the pill and not being obscured by the pill. So how to deal with this? So this is a great use case for one of these blend modes, which again is part of CSS. The first time I saw these mixed blend mode CSS properties was when Tailwind highlighted that they had added features for them and showed off how to use them with like a text gradient text that like clips a background. And it's like how you make that really nice gradient text, I think, is like a clip mode in combination with like a blend mode. I'm not sure. I need to go through. Anyways, there's this really cool thread that talks about each one of these, and one of them is exclusion. And that turns out to be a great case for this. Difference also works. Mixed blend mode difference. I think exclusion is a little bit more complicated in how it arrives at the color that it gets at between the two. But the basic idea with any of these mixed blend modes is that the whole idea is you're forming a new color from two layers, right, that are on top of each other. And so you've seen like difference or darken or brighten or soft light or hard light or overlay. Or then you can do things like change the hue and the saturation or basically you can think of, you have red here and blue here and you stack them on top of each other. You have two colors and each color can be split into an RGB channel. And kind of as he explains here, each mode is basically a function of the numbers from each RGB channel. So how do you get the red for the new color? Well, you look at the red for color one and the red from color two, and you either average them, take the higher of the two, take the darker of the two, some other complicated transformation. You do that for RGB and you get a new color. So it's pretty amazing. Like it just kind of boils down to that and how you treat each one of those transformations. If it goes negative, turn it to positive. Those give you like, those are what all of those different labels mean. And exclusion or difference. Well, he says here, he says that difference does exactly what it sounds like. It finds a color in between the input colors. Subtract the bottom color from the top color. Any negative colors are made positive. And so this turns out, and then exclusion produces a similar result, but in a much more complicated way. Subtract double the product of each channel from the sum of each channel. To do this, we need to normalize the values between 0 and 1. So, again, I'll link to this in the show notes, but you can see here it takes a difference of it, just like it would say. Or yeah. The exclusion is kind of like a nicer result. And so if you have a black background with white text, and then your pill is white, and the pill is what moves over here, then basically that's what happens. So the pill moves, and as it covers the text, it kind of inverts it. It calculates the difference, and that's what lets you make the text appear, you know. It basically appears black on the white pill, but it appears white when it's on the black background. Yep. So
this can be like, I've used this before too, when you're doing like a progress bar,
mm-hmm.
and you have the percentage like displayed somewhere in the bar, but then you also have like the background of the bar fills up as the percentage goes. So eventually you get to a point where it's like 10% and the progress, there's like a blue progress bar that's behind the one,
right?
But then like the 0% sign or something.
Right. Exactly. So you want to invert this. It. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. The great little tip, little trick for stuff like that. So
super cool.
Yeah.
Your demo here, just it feels like butter smooth.
It's so easy too. I mean, between that and the frame of motion ID, the last little detail, I'll again put the link to the code as well. If you've never used layout ID before, it's a really neat technique in Framer. You have 5 tab links. One of them's active. The active one, you actually want to render a separate element. So normally you would say like, make all these nav links like inline block, give them padding, rounding, and then if it's active, you would make the background white. In this case, you actually want there to be a separate DOM element that can move around to the different positions. And so what you do is you render each of the 5 links, and then you have a conditional piece of conditional logic in your JSX that says, if this link is active, let's render another div. We'll absolutely position it behind it. And that way, if you give it a layout ID of like bubble or active nav link or whatever, frame of motion, like when you flip, it will unrender it from here and render it to here. And frame of motion can use layout ID to automatically animate from the old spot to the new spot. And whatever it changes, it's like a very opaque way. You're not telling it like, here's where it is. You're not telling it like, here's when you need to animate. It just says, if there's an element with a layout ID of active nav link, and any CSS changes or any of the HTML changes that causes it to re-render, I will do a, not flip, it's not flip, but it's, you can think of it like flip. It finds out the target, the end location, and then it animates it from the beginning to the end. And this can be because, again, you've unrendered it from this part of the tree and you've rendered it over here, or you've changed justify start to justify end and it moves it over there. It's a layout animation, which is like pretty powerful in frame of motion. So that's how that works.
Yeah, it's like a magic move in
Keynote, exactly.
All those tools. I've used this across pages in Next.js, and it feels magical.
Yeah.
Is it
your image demo?
That is so
cool.
It's the demo itself is a little buggy. There's like a lot of weird states you can get into, but you can have like your index page, have a layout ID, And then the next render of the React app, when you click a link, will be like your
full page image.
Yeah, like your blog post page, right, or whatever. And if that layout ID exists on both those pages, Frame or Motion is going to basically keep it in its original. It's the flip stuff. It keeps it in its original position, then moves it to its new position.
And your demo had images, right? Like a grid of images.
Yeah, I did images that
kind of. And that would even change the aspect ratio.
Yeah.
And it still animated it to the new aspect ratio, which is really cool.
Yep. I think there was like some stuff that there's just like a lot of HTML, and there's some stuff that animates well and some stuff that doesn't. But yeah.
Yeah. That's neat.
Also, yeah, pretty good. Just thinking of the mixed blend mode stuff. I have like text that flies around.
Ah.
And it would be really good if I could mix blend mode while it's over an image. Because if it's like a dark image or a light image, this is just a little throwaway demo. But
Totally. Now, the one, I guess, because we're talking about this and like people might be interested in like the details. The one thing about this is that it doesn't actually preserve the white color perfectly. So it would actually be pretty difficult if you had this as like a brand. This is not pure white, because when you do exclusion or difference, you're going to like lose some unless the background is like completely desaturated.
Okay.
So if I did like background slate 900, and you'll actually see this in the demo, the white becomes not pure white, because you by necessity are blending it through the background, like the layers below it. Mm-hmm. And so you lose some of the pure white. So to get it to do pure white, I think this would be like a fun bonus challenge. You either make the pill white and give it mixed blend exclusion difference, or mixed blend mode exclusion or difference, and the white goes down a little bit because it does a difference calculation with the slate 900. And you get something that's a little bit like softer than pure white.
Because the slate has some white.
Exactly.
It doesn't have a lot.
But it's not that it has some white in it. It has some color with it. Okay. And so the saturation, the blue saturation, makes the white this like almost like softer white, because it's just the way it's calculated. It's like the difference between pure white and a bluish black is like slightly off white, you know? So the text stays perfect when you do that, but the white pill loses it. Or you can put mixed blend exclusion on the text. The pill stays pure white, but then the text changes. So if you had like a brand color and you wanted this to work on any surface or anything, that would be an interesting challenge to take if someone wants to look at that. And I think you'd have to like double up the text or something, or have it not worry about, I don't know how you would do it right off the top of my head.
I have a question. So you started this off by like all these mixed blend modes they're basically functions that take two colors and produce a new color.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could you
derive?
Could you like customize the function in a way that's like basically the outputs of this are either the gray for like the inactive tab, or it's black
when it covers like this color. Yeah.
So it's like, basically function is
it's
like
a step function. It's just a lookup table.
Yep.
That's interesting. I don't know. That's a great question.
Like, can you cut just right? Because you know, like CSS, you can
customize. It's literally a function, like, right?
So.
Yep.
Is there
the Bezier curves, or like the complete definition of that? That's a great question. We'll have to look and check it out.
That'd be really cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Probably do some wild stuff too.
Dude, definitely. Yeah. So, anyways, that's what I've been working on. So.
Cool.
This is like, there's a animated tabs version, which has a lot more accessibility requirements for it to be a really good tabs component. Devin from React Aria actually saw my tweet on this demo, whipped it up with the tabs component from React Aria Components, which is a video I made last week. And it was pretty sweet because it worked with it, with the styling I had, the layout ID from Frame of Motion. But then now you have arrow keys and you have focus management. It focuses the content when the tab is active. So that's more of like a full featured example. I think in my YouTube video, I'm going to stick with like a nav link because that's just like pretty simple and folks can learn the technique and copy that right in. So that was another cool little spot about it, but that's going to be coming out this week. So
nice.
Yeah. Let's talk about what you've been working on. You had a little thing come up with redirects in Next.js.
Yeah. This isn't a Next.js specific thing, but we do use Next as our, I guess, front end, back end, whatever solution.
Whatever JavaScript developers call it these days.
um, So arbitrary
service redirects. Aggregator.
Yeah. arbitrary redirects is what I've been working on. So I kind of ran into an issue where I want to send people a link, but they have to be logged into their account to view it. And so if they're not logged into your account, I don't want to just render a screen that says like, you can't view this link. You have to be logged into your account. Mm-hmm. I want to redirect them to the login screen. And then once they log in, I want to redirect them back to that link. So in a sense, you can imagine like our login screen, our login URL is basically like slash login and a question mark. And there's something like after login,
redirect to
equals, and then you give it a URL, which sounds great. Like that's all you need to do. But there's a ton of security things that fall out from this, and they just get super, super nasty. It's like one of those things where it's like sounds simple, and then boom, you're like at the bottom of a pit.
Interesting. So
the first thing is I could craft a URL that's something like, you know, buildui.com/login? After login redirect to equals, and I give it like, you know, http://myevilsite.com/update-your-credit-card. And myevilsite.com is like a site that I built. It's like a phishing site. I make it look just like Build UI. I send you the link. You click on it. And let's say you log into your account. And then you're redirected over to this other site that you think is Build UI because
right. It
looks just like Build UI. And there's a thing that pops up and it says, hey, please update your credit card.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, of course. Yeah. I'll update my credit card.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting.
And so, yeah. So you basically can't do arbitrary redirects. There's a few other things that like fall out from this, and I can get into them, but yeah, it's kind of like a tricky thing where you want to have like a after login redirect. How do you deal with this? And so there's a lot of answers.
You could validate the thing and make sure it's only on the current domain.
Exactly. So then there's all this regex. How do you validate a URL is on the current domain?
Like, oh my gosh.
It's hard. It's like, it's just like, also too, you end up with like this giant blob of regex, and that's like, do you really understand what that does? Like someone can maybe get through there.
You could also whitelist the possible redirects. And so when you add a path, like a user flow that we want to support, we just look up in the array if it's there.
Exactly. You make an object that's like redirect back to this screen.
Right.
It's hard coded, but the URL I want to redirect you back to might have dynamic data.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like a slug or something.
Yep.
Yep.
So there's a lot that falls out here. A lot of these articles say like, this is the best regex to use.
Mm-hmm.
Like just use this regex, giant regex blob you don't understand. And you just copy and paste in your code. And you're like, I trust this. Mm-hmm. This article just told me why it's so bad to do arbitrary redirects. Yeah. And then they're just like, just copy and paste this regex that you don't understand into your app and you'll be fine. So it's just very like.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, don't trust anything you read on the internet. And it was a picture and it said, turn this upside down. And I turned it upside down. It's just like an upside down bird. And I was expecting to see something. That's a great point. You know, it literally just told me don't trust anything. Yeah. And I did exactly what it said. You read a whole book, a short story on not trusting regexes. Yeah. And then you use it.
Anyway, the JavaScript has a pretty nice answer to this. That's like, it's semi-complete, but JavaScript has a URL object. Mm-hmm. And you can take a URL and you can construct
new URL from string.
Parses it. You can pass in whatever that redirect to after login query parameter is. And then you can do a whole bunch of assertions on it. What is the domain?
The base. Okay. Origin? Right. Cool.
If it's a relative URL, you can give it like basically a default host name to use in case it's parsing a relative URL. It's weird, but that's just the constructor. Mm-hmm. You know, JavaScript built-ins are weird.
They are.
But it's nice that you get to use a JavaScript object.
To parse something
that's built in. And you're not just using this funky
regex. Yeah. The last thing I can think of is you could, instead of like, it's dynamic and anyone could. there's a way you could add the redirect from a code path in the application on the server. If you look to the session, that's the last thing I could think of how to do this in a secure way. So you land on a page. At that point, you're not logged in as private. It goes to the server knows this. You push the redirect into the session, and no other code could do that.
Because the session is like signed.
It's secure and signed. Exactly.
Yep.
And then you pop it off of that.
Yep.
That's just the last thought I had.
That's how.
Is that how like it works?
That's how flash messages work.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
like, you could imagine there's like an arbitrary flash message you put in. That's like someone crafting malicious URL that says you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Your
right. Flash right. Message. Right.
Yeah. But
they can't do that because it's signed. Yep. Yep.
Yep. I think that would be good.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Okay. So keep going. So you get the URL in the JavaScript object.
Yep. No, that's basically
it. That was a solution.
You use a JavaScript object.
And then you validate it after login.
So you build you build a JavaScript object for your domain. So it would literally be new URL string, https buildui.com and string. And we would say this is like our URL. And then underneath that, you get the new JavaScript object, let URL to check equals new URL.
Request.query.
After redirect to after login, and then you give it a bunch of defaults, like if there's no domain specified, use this domain, whatever. And then you take both those JavaScript objects and you say, does object1.origin equal object2.origin? Then I know that this is a build.
Because then it works on like preview and in local and like production and everything.
You're just looking at the base.
You're looking at the...
There's like a bunch of checks you can add, but at its core, you're not just using a regex to tell if this thing is safe. You're actually you're constructing two URLs, comparing the origin, which just feels a lot nicer.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Anyway, I just wanted to share this because you would think, just redirecting.
It should be easy. I have some points to make questions. First, I think there's like a meta point here that like the fact that you have to do, this is a feature like every website should have. First of all, does this mean that we can now, like, if I'm on a private video and I'm not logged in, I click sign in, we can add the redirect too? So when I go to the sign in, it'll bring me back to where I was instead of the homepage?
Yeah, I'm gonna add that.
Cool.
Because right now we do, like, we have, like, the client-side routing.
Right.
I want to build that into that layer, but yes.
Part
of me doing this was having that case in the back of my
head. Yeah, cool. Second, I think it's interesting to think, like, one of my like UX pet peeves is like clever password forms, like sign-in forms. I want to make like a video about this or at least like some tweets or something because there's so many websites that like show you the username first and then the password second. So you have to press your autocomplete like twice. Mm. They like reveal it.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Because they don't know how you log in. You might be like a Magic Link account.
Yeah.
You might be a user in this
bucket. It's such a bummer.
Yeah.
And then... Also, like, there's people who show the login as like a modal. You're in the context of a page. Let's say you're on a private video and build UI. You click login and it shows it on a modal, and then it goes away. And now you're logged in. But the autocompletes can get confusing. Basically, I think like the answer here is like being simple is like the best, and just having a separate login page that has like this redirect behavior. So that's just like another little thought here. But when you do that, you definitely want to redirect them because otherwise it's really annoying, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the best experience. At least I know I use like the Magic Links. I just use the Apple stuff as much as I can. And I think that's like what we like optimizing for. Even though I know a lot of people like using Google. Some people like Magic Links. I think they've fallen out of favor now. We built Evermap with Magic Links.
Yeah, Magic
Links. It feels weird to have to switch apps now that password managers are a thing. So anyways, the last point I wanted to make was just that it's crazy that this is like, there's no thing. This is not a Next.js thing. I mean, I guess it kind of is. I'm not bad mouthing Next. It's just that the fact that you had to do this on your own, there's no page in the docs in Next.js for this. Is there?
I think like Next would say, go use Next auth. And then I don't know.
And they have the redirect too.
I have no idea.
Yep. That's interesting. Okay. But I just think that this is the kind of thing that like every web app needs that like a Laravel or Rails would have out of the box some solution for, right?
I mean, Rails would say use device.
Really? Okay. So they have it as device. So Laravel has it out of the box
because
they have like first party auth, I'm almost certain. And it's just another example of like you know, the stuff, it's like this stuff is not easy, but it's also not differentiated. This is like the norm. This is not the business value add of Build UI. So I always like, I just think it's important to like be aware. I don't know. Like I just, you know.
You're using the wrong tool set, buddy. You're using the wrong tool set if you don't.
Well, you know, there's, yeah, we don't have to get into all that trade-offs conversation. But I mean, there's lots of things that we like about the tools. But this is the kind of thing I would like. I'm just putting it out into the universe that we are going to see more of these kinds of things, you know, make their way into the frameworks that we front-end developers like to use because, there's no reason that we should have to reinvent this. You know, this is a solved problem, right?
Yeah, I don't know. So like someone could come out with like auth.js and it handles all these cases. But like there's a lot of like, yeah, there's just a lot of like, what message do they see when they land on the login page? When do you redirect them? What, like yeah. You could think you could come up with a general case. What happens if you want to redirect them to another domain?
Right.
I mean, that's perfectly right. Bad. Like right. Someone could right. have right. that use case. We don't.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think
it's just, it reminds me of like what
it's ridiculous that you need to go add a feature because you want to send someone a link and they need to be logged into their account right. and you're reading up about regexes
yeah.
and how to
yeah, exactly.
I completely agree with that. But I don't know. I think that you want, there's a million trade-offs and you can get stuck in like a super rigid system. Like you're using like, I don't know, some plugin for everything and you can't customize anything. And that feels awful as well.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. You've been there. And so you're okay to do this because you know, you'll have the flexibility to make it what you want and not be looking up some APIs for a library and being frustrated when it doesn't work with something that we're using, something else we're using. Or
I, the Laravel stuff sounds interesting. Like first party support. I mean, Devise has been great. Like Devise is awesome.
Right.
So that's what I would lean towards.
Cool. Awesome, man. Well, that's a good little tip. Yep. The URL constructor in the DOM is awesome. Yeah. I've used it before for sure. Let's wrap up, I guess, with, just a little quick commentary. You kind of had skimmed through, Rich Harris's newest talk and had some interesting things to say. What were you talking about earlier?
Yeah. We'll link the talk in the show notes. It's like Rich's spicy takes on like current
2023 edition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. exactly. The talk is great in that it's all chopped up into chapters. So you can just go to the takes you want. You don't have to watch the whole talk. That's why cool. I just went to the things that I was like, I really want to hear what he says here. There's one that I liked on RPC. Basically, he says that like everyone is all the JavaScript frameworks are doing this big push towards RPC where, you know, you can write a server function and then invoke it from your JSX. So something like
a like button on a tweet, you have like an on click and you can pass it like a server and
you pass it like a function. It looks just like a regular function, but that function isn't running in the browser. That function is running on the server. And this like, the reason we call this RPC is because it's like, it is just the client is making like a remote procedure call to some just, hey, server, run this code. There's like no, I guess there's no like structure to what that code is. It's just, hey, run this code. So
the function is literally like run the code inside the body of the function is running in the server. So you could do like process.env.
Yeah, database.
For example.
You have access to the database and it's like secure because you know it's your server accessing it, not like the user's browser.
Right. Console.log process.env. It's running in Node, but you can also like, what happens if you console.log X or like count and it's like referencing a count variable that's in the function? What about the arguments you pass to the function? Those are coming from the client. They have to be serialized. So there's like this whole translation layer, what is happening in the DX and the way you're supposed to think about it versus what's actually happening is that all the state and context and the arguments needed for to run the function, like the inputs, both the hidden and explicit ones, need to be serialized, sent over the wire in an API route, and then executed on the server. And yep. That's kind of what he was talking about.
Yeah. So just this idea of Yes, exactly. And sort of his commentary is that like everyone is rushing towards us. And mm-hmm. it's true. I mean,
it's in the
Remix has this in Actions. Mm-hmm. React server components are going to have this.
Now, Remix Actions don't close over component state. Correct. So that's correct. Like a different, slightly, yes, that's fair. Slightly that's, more yes. of a separation. However, you can run into things that are tricky and confusing because it feels like you're writing a file, a function in the same file as your client modules, but that's not true.
Right. The Remix, I would say, is like, it's basically like this hidden API route yes, that you're creating, but it doesn't, you don't really feel like you're setting up an API route. So
you can you do the, so that the Remix has it, Quick has it.
And theirs is more the original one you talked about where like, you just feel like you're passing in a function and you're closing over all the client side state. React server components are going to have this.
The mutation RFC.
Yep.
That's like basically done.
I don't know. But they will have this. I've seen
now, is it, can you do those mutations from only server components or client components too?
I think you can write these. So I don't know because I haven't used it. I think you write the function in a separate file. You note it with like use server.
Okay.
I think you might be able to write the function in a server component.
Okay.
But you write it, if you're writing the function in a server component, you also note it with use server.
Okay. Okay. So maybe it won't
have. You can pass it, but I think you can pass it into client components.
So could you pass like a count variable from a use state and a client component into like one of these server mutations and have it like close over it?
I think you could as an argument.
Yeah.
I don't think you can.
Could as a closure. Okay.
But again, I have to like,
yeah.
A lot of this is just.
Work in progress, RFC land. But anyway, again, Rich's overall takeaway was yes. he's happy to wait on this and doesn't necessarily think it's a good idea or.
So his take is that everyone is rushing towards this. Mm-hmm. He wants to wait, mm-hmm. maybe wait a year or two mm-hmm. and see how this plays out. There's just a lot of like, not his words, but there's like a lot of baggage that comes with this, such as you're creating API routes, you're exposing some code that runs over your server in some way and
to the public internet.
To the public
internet. And you're not even aware of it.
And it doesn't feel like it. So it
feels like you're writing a private function in like a server module.
Yeah. And there was a thing that like that kind of struck me here was like, yeah, it's awesome that you don't feel like you're setting up an API route. It sucks when you're like working on an app and you have to go open up a new app, add an API route just to access the database. There's just so much context switching. The fact that you can just write a function, note it with like use server, and the fact that you know this is going to run on the server is awesome. Like that's awesome. But then there's all this other stuff that comes out, such as, yeah, you're exposing this function.
It's Uncanny like, Valley.
Yeah, on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like this is just a function that anyone can run on the internet.
Yeah.
He gives a really cool example where I forget the actual function, but he's got a function that runs on the server and it takes an argument. It takes like a sort by argument. So it's like function, sort users, and you pass in sort by. And he types this in TypeScript. So you can sort by either first name or last name. It's like literally string first name, union string last name. And if you ever try to call this function with something like age or birth date, you get your code wouldn't compile. You get a type error. You're passing in a value that this function doesn't take. But if this function is really being turned into
A public API route can be called with anything.
It can be called with anything. Yeah. Just like you can write TypeScript and I can import your TypeScript library in my JavaScript app and I can call it
anything.
You know, the fact
you're not protecting against runtime anything.
Exactly.
You're protecting against a programmer error, but this case is not a programmer error
because it's a malicious programmer trying to send data to your server. Yeah. So anyway, I want to say like I am really excited about server components and mutation. I think they're going to be a huge boost to the productivity of the types of apps I work on. So I can't wait for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I absolutely appreciate this talk. I love hearing these takes. Just like, yeah, it is true that everyone is rushing towards like this RPC stuff. And I have a lot of respect for the people that are like, we're going to wait and we're going to see how it plays out. And like, we don't need to like change our marketing page and just get behind. I have a lot of respect for people that act like that.
That's cool. Just one last thing on the TypeScript thing. I think in this case, it would be the same as like any network boundary. I would hope that the tooling and in particular React Server Component Mutation, which is likely the first flavor of this that we're going to use, would have the correct typing such that the arguments are anything. So in the same way that with like React request.query from get server-side props, when you type it and you say, oh, my page is going to put sort ascending or sort descending, you don't lie at that boundary. That's where like a ZOD comes in, yeah, right? And so that is a network boundary. So I think the tooling can make it in such a way, can, if it's done correctly, it can raise those things so that you don't just write a TypeScript type that says this can either be this or that. And it's like, okay, no, it's like you have to handle the other case because it's not this or that. It is arbitrary. Yeah, exactly. It's runtime data that you have to handle every case for.
But again, so I think Rich's point here is if you want to express your server code as just an inline function,
yeah, right,
in your component that feels just like JavaScript.
Right. You're going to be thinking about the cases where you're calling it with these different variables.
Yeah, you're going to write it like you would write a JavaScript function, right, that exists in a library. You write it as if it's sure. called by this.
And but hopefully, I think there's, yeah, yeah.
I think we have to wait and see what the thing is. And maybe it's just like, maybe it's just beaten into our brains, like these are arbitrary inputs, and therefore you always use something like ZOD to validate runtime data. Just speaking of this, we have some like API routes in Build UI where I added ZOD to just validate the query parameter. It just makes everything so
it makes it easier
because you just know
from, you know, from there on once, out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's interesting, but I'll have to watch that talk for sure. I really, really like Rich Harris's talks. So
cool. Yeah, that was my favorite.
That was your favorite segment.
Because, you know, it's the thing I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
He's tearing it down.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. All right, man. I think we can wrap it up there for this week. And what do we have coming out? So we've got this video coming out on Build UI or on YouTube, rather. We've got some Tailwind videos.
The tabs.
Yep, animated tabs coming out on YouTube. Got some Tailwind videos coming out on Build UI. And you're getting ready to record a React Server Components demo.
Yeah.
And we're excited. We're going to have some more time to work on Build UI here in about 2 weeks. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, we got a lot of stuff planned. So let's wrap it up there for this week. And we'll see y'all next week.
That's it.
All right. Bye.